Welcome back to The Inspired Educator, empowering new teachers to thrive. I'm your host, Dr. Latoya Crockett, and I'm so excited to have you join us today. This podcast is all about supporting new and aspiring teachers as they navigate the joys and the challenges of teaching. Whether you're a first-year teacher, a substitute teacher, or transitioning into education, we are here to uplift and support you as you navigate your teaching journey. Today's episode is all about something vital to every educator's journey: mental health and emotional well-being. As educators, we often focus so much of our energy and our time on serving others that we forget to take care of ourselves. And the truth is that for us to have a sustaining career in education, we have to do more than just lesson plan. It requires emotional awareness, boundaries, and intentional self-care. That is why we have invited Claire to the show today. Claire is the founder of the Feeling Center. Her work focuses on emotional resilience, personal growth, and helping individuals reconnect with their sense of joy and purpose. Claire, welcome to The Inspired Educator. We are so honored to have you here with us today.
I'm so excited to be here. So thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Absolutely. Before we jump into this crucial conversation, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I wear many hats. I am a mom of 2 teenage girls and 2 stepboys. So I keep myself very busy, but in the day, I'm still an educator. So I've been in education over 20 years. And in the last 10 years, really specializing in kids' mental health, well-being, and well-being of staff and behavior. And then my other hat is, like you said, running the Feeling Center. So I decided about 5 years ago that I wanted to do more for women who were burnt out or overwhelmed. And I started the Feeling Center, which, like you said, we focus on thought work and how people can use tools and NLP and hypnosis to just feel better every day.
That work is so needed. I am a single parent, a full-time educator. Everything that you just said really resonated with me professionally and on a personal note, because as women, we wear many hats. And so we have to make sure that we are taking care of ourselves so that we can take care of others. I would love for us to start our conversation today around self-awareness. I know from personal experience that sometimes we get caught up in the day-to-day of living our life that we don't realize our emotional state. We don't realize what we're doing to ourselves. So I want to ask you, in your experience, how important is it for educators, or really for people in general, to really know themselves, to know their triggers, their values, and their emotional responses?
I'd probably say it's the most important thing, and it's where the journey should begin. I don't know who said it first, but I hear often awareness precedes change. Until we become aware of something, it's really difficult for us to grow in that area. And it can be, like you said, triggers. I call them hot buttons. When someone stands on my hot button, I go, oh, you know, why did I have a reaction there? But it could be like your values. It can be what you love, what you don't like, and specifically areas like change or conflict. So I don't really like change very much, and I'm aware of that. So there's a huge change happening in my life at the moment. And because I know that change is hard for me, I've been able to put in some self-care and tell people around me that there's a big change coming and, you know, I might be out of sorts. That stops the conflicts and all the negative emotion that might have come out if I didn't have awareness. So I think it's really like key to self-care.
It took a long time for me to get to this point of awareness, of knowing that if I know my triggers are my hot buttons, I absolutely love that. If I know my hot buttons, then that can allow me to prepare for what's coming and prepare others.
Yeah.
I think we don't spend enough time learning ourselves. So learning what is our hot button. And for me, the why behind it, which is a whole different podcast, but having to figure out what those hot buttons are, like you just said, is really the key. I absolutely love the way that you said that. Thank you for sharing that information with us. I think you really just spoke to this. How do you think that that kind of self-awareness can help protect our mental health?
So we don't want to spiral, right? We don't want to go down those negative patterns. We need to be able to identify what's coming up for us. And if we can stop the spiral before it gets gets too deep or goes too low, then, like I said, we can put in place those self-care steps. I think that mental health comes from too much negative emotion for too long. So if we're aware that we're in a not an ideal state, or we're involved in things that are not serving us or not helping us, we can then take steps to eradicate it or make changes. But if we're not aware of how we're feeling, what's leading to those feelings, then what patterns, then we're not in a step to save ourselves from that spiral.
My goodness. I am just connecting what you just said to the end of the year chaos that most educators are in. As educators, the end of the year can be very stressful. And so I don't think most educators really understand why it's so stressful for them. We have those surface level observations. We're doing testing. Our behaviors are starting to spike. We have a lot of performances. This particular year, we did a performance in my building that was new for me. And I had to step back and ask myself, why is this my hot button? Why am I so flustered by this? I have been doing performances for years and I wasn't even in the performance. It was the children who were on stage. So why does this bother me so much? And honestly, I'm still working through that. Like, it was a beautiful performance. Everything went perfect. Parents were happy. Kids were happy. But why did I allow it to stress me out for 3 weeks? And that brings me to one of my favorite sayings, circle of control. Like, I can't control this. We are going to do this performance. It is an annual tradition. I'm not on stage. So why do I allow it to bother me so much? Recognizing that self-awareness can then help me with my stress levels. Like, everything that you just said is just now coming full circle for me. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Look, we just started and you're helping me so much.
But good on you for stopping and asking that question. I think that is really what self-awareness is, being able to pause and ask yourself, what's going on for me? Why is this such a big deal? I love it when Simon Sinek, he talks about if your emotional response is over 5, something else is going on. It's not about the problem. And so I just love that, because if I'm reacting at an 8, a 10, then I have to sit back and go, hey, it's not about performance. It's not about the change. You know, this could be something from childhood, or it could be something from a past relationship, or, you know, all those things, but it's not about what I think it's about. And if it's just a minor reaction under 5, then it probably is about the performance, you know? Yeah. That's a really good tool.
Oh my gosh. Oh, this emotional response tool. We're going to have to come back to this, because this is definitely something that I need to be using. Many educators identify deeply as an educator, right? As a teacher, as a specialist, so like for PE or for art, we deeply identify with the roles that we hold in our classroom. What are some ways that teachers can create a stronger sense of identity and joy outside of the classroom?
This is a big one for me personally, because it took me to get incredibly unwell and have to give up teaching for a bit for me to be able to go, hey, what's my life outside of teaching? And I love zooming out and looking at our life like a wheel. There's actually a wheel of life. You can Google it. And you have a look at that wheel and you go, shivers, I've got finances, I've got spirituality, I've got fun and recreation, I've got relationships, I've got self-love, I've got friendships, and then I've got career. And that career is just one pie. But so many educators, me included for some time, asked my job to fill all my needs and be my whole identity. And so when I was forced to put it on hold, I was like, what else am I? What else do I do? And that's a really great work for people to do, is just delve into that. What are my interests? What, you know, where am I putting time and effort into my relationship? Have I thought about other financial goals? Where am I putting recreation in my life? And then you realize that your identity isn't just your career. Your identity is holistically way more than that.
Yes. One of the things that I really try to do with new teachers specifically is to encourage them to create routines or habits before they even start teaching and stick to them. I know a lot of my current coworkers like to exercise, or they have hobbies like painting or writing, but they go by the wayside because during the school year, they put all of their effort and energy into their classroom. And I really work hard to find the balance of encouraging new teachers to put forth their best effort in their classrooms, because that's where their passion is right now, especially those first few years in education, but also balancing that with who you are outside of the classroom. Because like you just said, you are so much more than just a teacher. You have many identities that you carry with you, and you can't let them go when you start teaching. It has a lot of negative effects outside of the classroom that you don't realize.
It's a hard truth for your listeners to ask themselves, I guess, but if I am making my whole life about teaching, you know, why? What am I hiding from? Or what am I distracting myself from? Or, you know, and that comes back to that self-awareness. And that's totally okay. Hand on heart, you know, my whole life is about teaching right now. So what is that? Why have I created that strategy? So yeah, I think that's another important piece of the puzzle for people to lean into and be really curious about
that. Oh, I'm so glad that you added that. Thank you. Thank you so much. I am writing that down because we definitely need to have this conversation. Or people, I'm a fan of journaling. I like to write a lot. And so sometimes when there are things that come up that maybe I'm just embarrassed about, I just don't want to talk about, or if I don't feel like I have someone to talk to, then I will journal. And I think this is one of those questions that is definitely worth some journaling. So yes, thank you for that. In your work, you talk about the power of choice, that gap between what happens to us and then how do we respond? How can teachers, or how can people in general, build awareness around the moment, around that moment, and choose healthier responses when things get really overwhelming for them?
I have to rely on Paul McGee's book. It's called Shut Up and Move On. So it's not the best title, but he has this excellent equation in there. It's event plus response equals outcome. And in that equation, I just think it's so good because something happens, that's the event, and then you get to choose what your response is, and that determines your outcome. And I think about that response maybe 20 times a day in my job as an educator. Something's happening, I get to choose that response, and that pause is where my power is. And just putting it in simple terms, like an equation like that, just really helps me break it down and go, whoa, 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 E plus R equals O. E plus R equals O. And you know what? Sometimes I get it wrong and that's okay. But I get to go back and say my R was wrong and therefore my outcome was wrong.
Oh my gosh. I could use this in my classroom tomorrow and I could see how this could affect and work with our students. Our focus today really is on educators, right? How do we uplift and support our teachers? And we could totally use this strategy with our students.
I do. Yeah, I teach them that really early on when I come across them. And because it's something they can grasp and understand, and it gives them back the power. But like you said, we'll talk about that another day. We'll get sidetracked there. Two educators talking about strategies for kids. That's a tangent.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Like we can never stop. We are always thinking about how do we help our children. So I brought up stress earlier just a little bit, but stress is definitely something that all educators experience and something that can be detrimental for our health. Stress can easily drag us into negative cycles, like blaming or complaining, which is one of the biggest ones that I see. How can teachers recognize when they're slipping into that cycle, into that space? And then do you have any small mindset shifts that could help us stay more empowered and grounded?
One of the things I love to do with clients, but also myself, is to focus on my language. So if I have a lot of words like, you know, never, always, I'm falling apart, I'm drowning, it's disastrous, the kids are terrorizing me, that's a real sign that I'm dramatizing things and I'm making them more than they are. So I really try and focus on my language and keep it as neutral as possible and catch myself when I'm using that language because it's not helping the situation. And then I have to rely on above the line, below the line. I absolutely love that. So when we're above the line, we're taking ownership. We're accountable. We've got total responsibility for our lives. We're looking for solutions. And then sometimes we fall below the line, right? We're blaming others. We're in denial. We're making excuses, pointing the finger around us. And when we slip below the line, we're like, right, I'm below the line. I'm thinking about this below the line. We lay in our bed below the line. So we're in blame, excuses, and denial. And like you said, complaining. And then we just have to listen out for that with that awareness we talked about. And we go, okay, I'm below the line. Let's flip this. Let's go up. Let's use our oars. Let's use ownership, accountability, responsibility. What can I do? What tiny shift can I do? And that helps. And it helps with yourself, but it helps with colleagues. If you have that language in your office and someone's below the line, you're like, whoa, 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 you're below the line. And I think sometimes you're going to let people be below the line sometimes, you know, hey, I'm below the line today. Totally okay. Get it out. Get it off your chest. You know, it's not about toxic positivity. We don't always have to be above the line, but it's just that awareness when you're not there and then tiny little steps to bring you back up. So yeah, language and then that above the line, below the line gets me every time.
My goodness. If I could have had this advice as a first year teacher, the stress that I went through, it definitely would not have been as detrimental. This is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. You have already given us multiple strategies that we can use in our classrooms to help us end the school year with a lot less stress and a more balanced emotional state, if that makes sense. You know, emotional fatigue is really hard for us. It is a real thing. We have our personal lives. We come in and we uplift and support our kids. And so we take on their trauma as well. And we take on their happiness as well. I don't want people to always think that it's negative. There are amazing things happening in our classrooms and with our kids, but we hold on to that trauma more. At least I feel like that. What self-care practices do you recommend for teachers who feel like they're running on empty?
So I think this is pretty personal, but it all starts with this. I'm doing the best I can and that's enough and that's okay and I'm enough and I'm okay. Don't judge yourself, don't judge yourself, don't judge yourself. I think all self-care starts with that. You know, there's no should. You're not comparing yourself against anyone else. You're doing the best you can. And then get curious. What do I love? So personally, I love nature. I love four-wheel driving. I love traveling. So I'm going to do more of that. But that's not for everybody. So exploring, what brings you joy? What makes you happy? Where are you most calm? Where are you most at peace? And sometimes that's a journey in itself. Sometimes over a year, you have to try 52 different things, you know, especially if you've never put yourself first. And so you try all these things and you go, I love that. Okay, so do more of that. And around you then will be like-minded people. So that's going to bring you connections. You're going to have good conversations and that's going to build your identity outside of that education like we were talking about.
You know, I find it very hard to find. I know there are things that I enjoy doing, things that I love doing, but it's also very hard for me to find that one thing that I deeply connect with. So like you mentioned, you love nature. Off the top of my head, I cannot think of something that I just love doing. I love to travel, but that also seems to be very cliche. And it's also not something that I can do often enough, if that makes sense. As a teacher, I work on the teacher schedule and I hate missing school. And so, you know, spring break and winter break and summer are when I choose to travel. Which again is a whole nother podcast, allowing your school schedule to dictate your life. Something else we definitely need to be discussing. But I think that's one of the things I personally have to work on. I have to figure out what really brings me joy so that I can go out and incorporate that into my schedule.
And if you don't mind me saying, we always think about the big things like going on a huge holiday, but ask yourself, what do you love about traveling? It could be, might not be, the new things and the experience. So a drive to a new city or somewhere close, it doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be a whole week. It's like, what's the smallest thing I can do that can bring me those feelings? Because it's the feeling that you're chasing. It's that feeling that you're chasing. And so how can I do that more each day without making it so big and expensive and out of reach that I only get to do it once a year or once every 3 years? What's the smallest version of that for me?
That is beautiful advice. That is absolutely beautiful. Just as you're talking, one of the things that we always do is go out to eat. When we travel, that's our thing. What restaurant can we find? What food can we find that's unique to the area? And so maybe that's what we focus on, trying a new restaurant every week. This is beautiful. I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much for this. Okay, let's keep going. Sometimes teachers can feel like they have no control, absolutely no control whatsoever. Do you happen to have any strategies that can help teachers shift their focus away from what's outside of their control and find more strength on what is inside of their control?
I think this one would have to be what had the greatest impact on me, my well-being, and my colleagues' well-being, is when we only focus what's within our control. Stephen Covey, in his book, I think it's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, he has the habit of focus on your circle of control. And when we're thinking in education, it's really our lesson plan, our tone in the classroom, our thoughts, feelings, our responses. And there's so much that's outside of that, if the children are coming in fed, or if, you know, their family life or your colleague's mood, or there's so much even further away from that, the government or, you know, the state of the policies or what's happening in the world. So it's understanding that you only have power over what you can control, and then all your energy just goes into that space. I love writing down absolutely everything that's on my mind when I'm feeling overwhelmed, everything down on paper, and then just put it in those three circles. So what's in my direct control, what's in my influence, and what's in my outside of that, in my concern. And then I just start doing baby steps with what I can control. And it just changes because you start feeling empowered, you start feeling like you're making a difference, and then it all ripples out.
I can definitely see this strategy being helpful when new teachers are interacting with their families.
Yeah.
And you just alluded to that, you know, children, whether or not they come in fed or not. As a classroom teacher, there's only so much that you can do. I know one of the things that I work on a lot with new teachers is how do you communicate with families? And I've had to reference circle of control. You can't force parents to come into the school. You can't force them to come to conferences. You can't force them to answer the phone. So focus on what you can control. What I love is that you recommended we write down those three circles, and then we categorize. We put those things, our actions, our thoughts into each one of those circles to help us really hone in on what we can control. That is great. I love that strategy. Thank you.
Just get out of your head, because when we're overwhelmed, when we're feeling in that negative space, it's too hard to organize it while it's in your head. So whatever you can do to get it out of your head on paper, and then it gets a bit more real and specific rather than, you know, the chaos that is sometimes the mind.
And there's the power in writing and journaling, right? Yep. We often hear about the importance of gratitude. But sometimes when you're busy, it feels like, oh, just one more thing. It doesn't come off as helpful. It comes off as, oh, I have something else to do. How can teachers or how can people authentically build gratitude into their daily routine without it feeling like one more thing to do?
I really think if you focus on the why do you want to do that? I think it's really helpful. So, and a little bit of understanding about the brain. So we have a reticular activator system, and the more we tell the brain something's important, the more it shows it to us. So you are going to buy a new car and you've decided that it's going to be a Toyota. So all you're seeing on the road is Toyotas, right? That's happened to you probably. It's happened to me for sure. Or my daughter and I have this practice where we try to find love hearts everywhere, and we find them because we're telling the brain it's important. So the same is with gratitude. That's what the whole practice is about. It's like, what's good in life? And then the more you write it and the more it comes into your awareness, the more you're going to be shown what's good. And that complaining and what's bad, it just, the brain doesn't think that's as important. So it doesn't show it to you as much. And so I think when you understand that you're actually trying to rewire the brain, you're actually trying to shift your focus, you're trying to shift your energy into a direction of what makes me feel good, what I like, then it becomes not a chore. It's just a way that you want to be. And I love doing it with kids. So you get the end of the day, like, how was your day? And they're like, ugh. But I say to them, what was the best part of today? Or, you know, what was your favorite moment? Or, you know, what was the best part of yesterday or today? Find me the most happiest moment. And so you're bringing gratitude forward by making them search through all the good moments to find the best one. And then they give you something specific. And then they're focused on that. They're not focused on the, you know, shouting teacher or, you know, what happened, their boyfriend broke up with them, whatever. They're actually just focused on what was good. And I think having a practice of that in staff is really important. We started a debrief in the afternoons. We all get together and we say, you know, what was bad, get it off your chest. But then we're like, what was good? And so everyone has this practice of going home, thinking about what was good of the day. And so the next day, because we do it every day, you're looking for something good that you can share in the afternoon. And it just shifts your way of being, I guess. And then, you know, gratitude makes you feel good. More of that, please.
I definitely would agree.
Yeah. I hope that helps. So just think, yes, when you understand the why and what it's doing to rewire your brain. And I think we've moved to these chores and these gratitude journals because somebody's made it an action to, but without telling people the why you do it. And then you miss out on that. So it becomes, like you said, a chore or another thing to do. But I think it's so important.
You know, I think it is a great idea to do this with children and not to go, you know, and focus on kids. But I think as educators, we also feel like we don't have enough time to do everything. And so this is one of those things that you literally can do like you just said, at the end of the day, like I teach kindergarten, and so we call it a closing circle. So we come together at the very end of the day, and then we could easily incorporate this strategy into our routine. So not only am I facilitating the circle, I am now participating because now I get to share what was good about my day. And so that's helpful for me. And it's me as the adult modeling the behavior for children, which then, of course, creates a habit for them. See, something else we can use in our classroom tomorrow. Thank you yet again. This has been absolutely amazing. New teachers often struggle with this idea that they have to be perfect. And that was definitely me. Like, we have to do everything the right way. What would you say to a new teacher who feels overwhelmed by this idea that they have to be perfect and they can't make any mistakes?
So many things. But one of the, you were talking just before about modeling for the children. I think when we model perfectionism to the children, we undo everything we are actually trying to teach them, which is mistakes is learning and everything's an educative opportunity and, you know, failing's a part of moving forward. And if we're trying to be perfect, we can't model that growth mindset to the kids. But also it helps to understand what perfectionism really is, because by being a perfectionist, you're actually trying to protect yourself and control an outcome and protect yourself from the discomfort of negative feedback or rejection. So understanding that it's actually just fear and trying to control things and going, oh, geez, it's okay if I don't do it perfectly and someone gives me negative feedback, I can handle that. I can handle that. And so understanding what perfectionism is and then reminding ourselves the beauty of what we're trying to model kids, I think is how you move from perfectionism to done is better than perfect, which is my motto. Done is way better than perfect, because you get frozen in perfectionism and you get so much time wasting and procrastinating. And really, you're just trying to avoid someone's judgment or maybe your self-judgment. But you can handle that. You have the skills to get through that discomfort. You're an adult, you know? Just put our big pants on and go, okay. It doesn't feel nice, but the more you do it and the more you realize that it's a great outcome and you don't waste all that time and you're not paralyzed by that perfectionism rut that you get in because you just keep redoing worksheets or you keep redoing lessons. And, you know, there's a real freedom in that.
I had to pause because what you just said resonated with me. Oh, it hits me on so many different levels, professional and personal, that perfectionism is really just fear. And it just hit home because there are several things that I'm going through right now. And I'm like, that's true. That's why that's not done. Because I don't want someone to say something negative about this. Or, oh, I have a observation coming up. Oh, I don't want my principal to say anything negative about me because I value their input and their perspective so much.
You know, but when they say that feedback to you, that's your opportunity to grow and learn. And we all want to grow and learn. We're educators. So it's that mindset shift. It's that flip the script. It's, okay, my principal might say something negative, but what a great opportunity for me to lean into that and grow and learn. And it's having those skills of emotional regulation to not shy away from that. It's not easy, but it's simple when you know how.
Yes, yes. You know, one of the things that I am coming to realize is that some of the things that we are working on as adults stems from the fact that we did not address these, or we were not taught how to address these concerns as children. A lot of the social emotional work that we are now seeing in schools really is there to support children, but it's work that needs to be done in the adults as well. Just listening to you right now, some of these things are things I work on with my kindergartners. And so it's very interesting. I am helping 5 and 6 year old children with this skill. And yet these are things that adults need to work on in order to help regulate themselves and to help them run a smoother classroom. So hopefully what we're doing is we are now helping the next generation of adults learn to regulate their emotions and learning how to take care of themselves. So hopefully we prevent this level of stress, burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I had to learn it as an adult. You know, I learned this by going back learning the coaching, learning the NLP, learning the hypnosis. And that's why I do the Feeling Center, is because I want to help as many people as possible learn these skills, because life's a lot better when you know them.
Yes.
And there's no shame in that. Like, there's no shame, and you don't have to go back to the story as to why you didn't learn it when you were young. You just didn't. So now you have possibility to learn it, you know, access the resources that are out there. And there's so many people that want to help.
Yes. So, you know, that is a perfect segue into my final question for you. For our teachers who are listening, who feel like they are just barely holding it together right now, what is one simple, encouraging first step they could take to protecting their mental health?
I think putting your hand on your heart, like I said before, and saying, I'm doing the best I can. Don't judge yourself. Don't judge yourself. Don't judge yourself. And then get curious. I really believe that before any of this work, ask the questions, am I sleeping right? Am I drinking enough water? Am I moving? Am I getting enough sunlight? I mean, it starts there. And if we're not, then that's the priority before any of this work. And then when you're sleeping and you've got the water and you're moving, then it's just choose one area. It might be boundaries, it might be control, it might be, you know, some of the self-care strategies, and then do that for a little bit. Learn about that, listen to some podcasts, read a book, and then when you feel good at that, then choose something else. It's not a do everything at once and overwhelm yourself, because we can personal develop ourselves into shame and feeling like we're not good enough, right? No, it's just like baby steps, little things that we can do each day. And choose one area to master, but always come back to don't judge yourself, don't judge yourself, don't judge yourself. You're doing the best you can with what you know. And then when you know more, you do more.
Yes. Yes. So this has been amazing. For anyone who would like to follow up with you, because I can see a lot of new teachers who, as they listen to this podcast, they agree and they can make a plan and I'm going to do these things. But then after a few weeks, it falls off. So for those who need some additional support, how can they contact you, or what services do you offer through the Feeling Center? What programs do you offer through the Feeling Center that would help them?
So I have, first of all, the Facebook page, and I do a daily talk, and I usually focus on an area like boundaries for a week. So I just give little suggestions. That's a really great place to start. It's really easy. And then every couple of months, I do a mindset mentorship. And that's a group program. It goes over 4 weeks and we work together on our mindset. And then there's an opportunity to work one-on-one. And I take people through what I call the calm mind method. And it starts with our mindset, and then it moves to our feelings and understanding all that emotional regulation that we talked about. And then we look at our actions and our habits and building our routine. And so we end up after the 12 weeks together, just having that real calm mind. And they're the three ways that people can find me. So I'm sure you'll pop below the Feeling Center, the Facebook page, and you can follow me for my morning talks. I go out. Today I saw some kangaroos. Would you believe it? I absolutely did. I'm not even lying. And I go out every day for my morning walk and then just talk about, you know, topics. Everything that we covered today is what I talk about. They're my pillars. So yeah, I really welcome anyone to join me there, and I hope to see them there.
Well, you will definitely see me there. I will say that. For all of our listeners, I will definitely be sure to link Claire's Facebook page and the Feeling Center website so that you can access her resources. Claire, thank you. Thank you so much for being here today, sharing your insight and your compassion with us. You have personally given me a lot to think about and a lot to work through. And I think even more importantly, they are actionable steps. There are strategies that we can literally implement tomorrow. To all of our listeners, please remember that your well-being is not a choice. It is not optional. It is essential. As educators, you don't just teach children. You don't just teach content. You are modeling for them. You are modeling emotional strength, resilience, and joy for every student and person that walks into your classroom. If you loved today's episode, I want you to be sure to check out Claire's work on the Feeling Center and her Facebook page, explore the resources that she has to offer, and really focus on your emotional wellness and your personal growth. If this episode resonated with you, please don't forget to subscribe and share this episode with a fellow educator. Always remember, you're not just surviving, you're thriving with a purpose. Until next time.